It's time to get the local view. He's the fine columnist for the Register Guard. Follow along on the front page of the sports section. Check back for what you missed at registerguard.com on Twitter at AustinMeekRG. Austin, happy Tuesday. How you doing?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing pretty good, trying not to breathe in too much of the air.
That seems like a strange statement, and it's only frightening in its accuracy. But, you know, I saw what you tweeted out today, and it was amazing because I was shopping at Fred Meyer on West 11th, and I'm coming out, and there's three employees taking their break, lighting up their cigarettes. And I get the addiction, but the idea of people going outside and thinking, let's make the air worse. I was kind of impressed that wasn't lost on you.
Well, yeah, we were just talking about that. Like, in the old days of the newsroom, where everybody had a cigarette going, like, if you came in on deadline, putting the paper out at midnight, you know,
right.
I imagine the newsroom of old used to be about, like, what it is when you walk outside right now. You just get hit with that smoky air.
Lovely. All right, let's be happy we're inside on our secure devices. I want to get to what you wrote about today as we put the final chapter in the summer of the Meeks. your initial piece, I'm reminding people, you wrote about taking advantage of all the state has to offer outdoors. You took suggestions. So what were some of the cool things you and your family were actually able to do this summer?
Well, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, and I had to come clean that I hadn't really lived up to my end of the bargain in terms of taking advantage of all these wonderful things that people had suggested to me. I feel like, ultimately, the summer was not a total loss. I was able to go to Crater Lake with the family. I did the Hood to Coast Relay. We talked about that. A few other smaller trips around the area. So, ultimately, I am left with a really long list of things that I still need to do. I barely scratched the surface of all these wonderful suggestions that I got. But I wasn't totally discouraged by that, though. It's actually kind of an exciting thing to feel like, you know, now for probably the rest of my life, I could cross some of these things off my list every summer. There's just such a plentiful number of things that you can do in this state when it's not on fire.
Right.
So I have many things to look forward to in the future.
Well, Crater Lake's a big one, and we were all given the gift of the eclipse, so that was kind of a freebie.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah, that was one of the best parts of the summer, I think.
All right, let's get to Oregon football, talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. Your post-game article Sunday, 77-21, always feels good. Your title was, it comes with a caveat, which means well done, but take caution. What'd you mean by that?
Well, I think any opening game has to be taken with a grain or two of salt when you're playing an FCS team like Southern Utah. So I don't know that you can draw any sweeping conclusions from that, but I will say I watched Oregon play an FCS team last year in their opener, UC Davis, and I thought it looked notably different this year. I don't recall at any point Oregon last year, regardless of the competition, looking as cohesive as the Ducks looked in that game on Saturday. So about as well as you could draw it up in terms of the start of the Willie Taggart era. But if there's a caveat there, it's, you know, just look back to the first game of the Mark Helfrich era. Oregon steamrolled Nichols, set a school record for offense. I think the final score was 66-3.
Right.
Now, if Willie Taggart's first couple years are as good as Mark Helfrich's, Oregon fans will take that in a second. But the first game does not necessarily predict how things are going to go.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned UC Davis, another Big Sky team, and, you know, you look at the final, it seemed comfy, but they scored to make it 18 points with, like, 6.5 minutes to go in the game. And like you wrote, little did we know that was kind of a hint of what was to come. So could we file this in the baby steps file? There was never a doubt of the outcome here. It was more of a glorious celebration.
Yeah, I think there were some things that you wanted to see from Oregon in the opener beyond the final score. You wanted to feel like you saw some signs that the defense was going to be able to compete, and I think we saw that. That first drive, Southern Utah just marched down the field, and everybody was thinking, oh boy, here we go again. This looks just like last year. But then from that point on, they really tightened it up. I was pretty encouraged by what I saw the rest of the way defensively. And boy, to hear Willie Taggart come out and say, I wanted to see our defensive backs play tighter coverage. I bet there was just a chorus of hallelujahs from Duck fans when they heard that, because how many people have said that over the years? You know, you just got sick of watching receivers catch passes with this 10-yard cushion in front of them. So I thought the defense took some baby steps, just like you said, which was what you want to see in an opener.
Yeah, also, one of the things last year that I talked about a bunch is, you know, when Oregon would go into the locker room at halftime, I think 9 times of 12, the opponent came out and scored a touchdown on their opening drive. One time it was a field goal, one time it was a blocked field goal. So the fact they pitched a second half shutout, again, you could say it's a Big Sky team, but you can't give up less. So you got to be encouraged by that.
Yeah, I mean, you take away the last 3 minutes or so of the first half, and that could have been even worse. It could have been 77-7.
Right.
I mean, Oregon gives up one long pass play, which, you know, it goes on the stats, it counts, but that's a big chunk of Southern Utah's yards that came on one long pass play. And then you give up a short field, muffing a kickoff. And that's two touchdowns that Southern Utah scored right at the end of the first half. And like I said, it counts. It goes on the final score. They had 21 points. But aside from that one little stretch and the opening drive of the game, Oregon really, really clamped down on Southern Utah most of the way.
Talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard, you know, obviously Justin Herbert was the backup last year, and this year we weren't sure who the two was going to be. And as the win became secure, the buzz was, who are we going to see? Turns out it was Taylor Alley. Should we read much into that? Perhaps the true freshman maybe not quite game ready, or Alley's improved the past 2 years. Is it too early to burn a red shirt? What did you make of the fact that when we all wondered who was going to get the snaps, it was Alley?
I would just read into it that Oregon wants Taylor Alley to be the backup quarterback, and they're going to give him a chance to do that. He certainly acquitted himself just fine in that game and the opportunities he had. I thought he made a nice throw from one hash mark to the other for a big gain. So I think he can be a serviceable backup. And if that's all you need your backup quarterback for, to play the garbage time in the fourth quarter, Taylor Alley can do that easily. Now, if it's a situation where you need your backup quarterback to start a game or to play important snaps in a Pac-12 game, then maybe they have to think again about that decision. But I think the only way Taylor Alley wouldn't have been the backup quarterback is if Braxton Burmeister had just knocked everybody's socks off in camp. You know, just had one of those camps where you're like, boy, this guy is too good to keep him off the field. We got to get him out there.
Yeah, maybe kind
of. It sounds like he had more of just the normal freshman camp where it's like, hey, he's got promise, but let's give him a chance to develop and give the older guy the first shot.
All right, let's move to heading into this season. There was a sense, or maybe a list of things to keep an eye on. The consensus was these running backs, this line going to do some damage. And 350 on the ground, Royce Freeman looked like a beast. And I get it, Southern Utah. But what about the show he put on? And was it me, or despite the extra bulk, he seems at least as explosive as he's ever been?
Yeah, I noticed the difference with him, and I think this is something that Willie Taggart has talked about, how he wanted Royce Freeman to be more of a north-south runner, because that's who he is. You know, his size, his ability to, you know, hit the hole and, you know, run into anybody who's in his way. There's not a whole lot of guys around the country who have that ability that Royce Freeman has. So that they wanted to use him in that way. And last year you did see a lot of kind of, you know, so sort of picking his way and trying to find the hole and going laterally. I just was struck by how much of this offense is just fast downhill. And I think that fits the personnel that Oregon has. I mean, Royce Freeman and the guys behind him. So what I saw was just a deep group of running backs in an offense that I think is really going to fit what they do well.
Let's wrap with Oregon State. If Portland State could kick an extra point or convert better than one of three on two-point tries, they might have beaten the Beavers. Instead, you had the backup kicker almost tie the game. But, man, they got outgained by a bunch, got run on, no sacks. With Minnesota coming to town, what should the level of concern be that another bad game this third season under Gary Anderson could be trouble?
Well, I think clearly so far Oregon State has been the most disappointing team in the Pac-12. I'm not sure who the runner-up would even be, because I really thought going into year three for Gary Anderson, this was going to be the step forward for Oregon State. You know, there was talk about their backfield being the best they'd ever had. They thought that Jake Luton finally gave them a quarterback who, you know, was a Pac-12 caliber starting quarterback. You thought the defense was going to be better with another year in the system, but boy, so far it's looked like Oregon State even has taken a step back from where they were at the end of last year. It's still early. If they can beat Minnesota, they'll be 2-1, which I think is what they needed to do in non-conference play to have a shot at a bowl game. So they still have time to get this thing on track, but it's definitely worrisome. And I wrote a little bit about that last week, about how it sort of feels like there's almost a disconnect with Oregon State, where, you know, when you're around the team for a little bit, when you listen to Gary Anderson, you feel like, boy, he's really got this thing going in the right direction. You know, there's not a lot of drama off the field. It seems like the talent level is getting better. His resume says that he's a program builder. So there's a lot of things that make you think the Beavers are getting better until you watch them play. And then you're like, boy, guys, if they're making progress, it's very incremental. They definitely so far have not shown that they're ready to make that big leap this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, with Minnesota coming to town and then the conference starts at Pullman, they could be 1-3 going into their bye with the seat warming, I guess would be the most logical way to put it for Coach Anderson. All right, Austin, we are off and running. I feel like the next thing we know, it's going to be the Final Four, and we're going to be like, where the heck did that time go? Always appreciate your time starting us off on a Tuesday. Have a good one, and I'll see you for Nebraska.
All right, sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
Take it easy.